We're doing the Sefer Hamidot. We're up to page Shin Aleph. And we've been studying about arrogance. And we're moving forward. We're on the bottom of page Shin Aleph. And if a person is a person of a worthy soul, meaning he values his soul, he's worked on himself. So then a person feels shame from the king of honor who controls everything, who's ruler over everything. In his hand is the life of all the living. And greatness and glory are fitting for him. But what are we taking credit for? When it comes to wealth and honor, he dishes it out. As Joseph proceeds, when he's standing before Paro, he gives a prelude. Paro said, I heard about you. You're such a genius. You could interpret any dream. What does Yosef say? Biladai. Nothing to do with me. Elokim yaneh shlom paro. God is going to answer. You know, what credit can I take for the brains God gives me? It's not like I did anything for it. V'chein amar alo le'elokim pitronim. And Yosef also says, when he speaks to the two people in jail, God is the one that gives the solution. So why don't you tell me your dream? Maybe God will allow me to figure it out. Vasheni lo, returning to page Shin Bet. We said that when a person takes pride, so he takes credit for something that's really not his. Vasheni lo b'midah p'chita zo, ki yeg v'aynayim uv'yado en me'uma min amalot v'ashlemiyot ha'chamudot v'tika nafsho b'aynav v'ro'et atzmo ro'uy l'chol ha'tov. One long run-on sentence, this whole paragraph. וחושב כאילו הם שלולים ממנו על כוחו, ובעבור זה מתיר לנפשו לחמוד אותם, ולהתאמץ בשקידתו עליהם להשיגם, ואינו וליבו עליהם כל יום תמיד, ומתאבל על היותם נדרים ממנו. The second issue that comes with this this terrible trait is that when a person is hoody, so there's, you guys probably encountered this, that sometimes the people who have the least to be proud about are the proudest. Now, this idea even shows up in the commentaries about the tribes, that the ones who were the daughters of Rachel and Leah had no problem bowing before Esau. The ones whose mother was a maid, they said, I'm not bound before him. Sometimes the fact that a person has faults is what he's trying to cover up for when he's super haughty. And in truth, he's missing something, and that's why he's arrogant. And that's why he gives false value to himself, because he doesn't have real value for himself.
Are you saying that way? I don't understand the connection between the bowing to Esav. It was proper for the tribes to bow to Esav, A, and B, the fact that the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah didn't do it is because of false pride, not because they didn't want to bow to a human being.
So the truth is that you're right. There are two interpretations over there. There is a medrash that says it was wrong that everyone bowed to Yaakov. But to Esav, thank you. But what I was quoting is maybe in Ibn Ezra, maybe a Rashbam, one of the commentaries there says the way I'm saying, that they see their father bowing, they see their big brothers bowing, but they're not going to bow. Why? So, one of the commentaries, I don't remember if it's the Ibn Ezra or the Rashbam over there, he says that when a person has a fault, so sometimes he covers for it with arrogance, with pride where it's really not fitting. It's unwarranted. Their father's bowing to Esau, but they won't. What's going on? And you find this sometimes with people who have certain handicaps. That you could sometimes find them being stubborn or being proud or being finicky about certain things about their honor, where some things they're entitled to. You know, if they're not going to fight for their honor, who will? But some things really stem from the fact that they don't have a true core. Sometimes their weaknesses take away from them true value, and then they cover for it with extra arrogance and pride. You see it sometimes. You see it sometimes with the girl behind the counter, you know, the girl at the checkout counter, or when you're trying to board a plane and they make a big fuss over something very little. And you're wondering, is this what's going to make her feel important? Why is she making a fuss over this? You know, like, what's the big deal?
People who are more insecure are more apt. I mean, Yaakov Avinu and the other brothers didn't for a moment probably think they were less than Esav, even when they were bowing there. So, yeah, that's, you know, it's just how it is. It's the person in the neighborhood I was told about who goes around, he's a big professor, and he collects bottles, you know, and makes sure they're not left in the street. You know, the plastic, he makes, puts them in there. Not beneath his dignity to go up and, you know, pick up the plastic that he sees lying around. It's important to him. I don't think he thinks any less, but maybe somebody else, someone should see me do that, you know. Nah, it's normal. I mean, I think most people have their arrogance. So just, you know.
He takes that as a trash.
That's the rabbi, exactly, Rabbi Bass. So that was impressive. Yeah.
So step one is that when a person is arrogant, so he has false pride, so then he tries to give himself credit where credit is not due, and then he has this consistent weakness that he's constantly covering for something, and then he thinks I deserve everything that's good, and then he feels like why aren't things better for me? Why don't I have it better? And then he allows himself to desire things and to work really hard or to attain things, and that becomes super important for him. And when he doesn't have them, he's really upset. I had a friend who was younger than us by 2 years, top basketball player, top student. In every field, he was top. And one day tried to commit suicide. So he came to me afterwards and he said to me, you know what pressure I'm under? I always have to be the best. I said, why do you always have to be the best? In his mind, he had this insecurity where he always had to show that he was the best. So he skipped one grade, he skipped another grade. Now he's the youngest. If he's the youngest, so he has to live up to the reputation that in his mind has to be there. So I remember when he had to have a Ferrari. He came to show me he got engaged. So he drove up in this fancy sports car with no hood. And okay, mazel tov. I felt bad for him because he never outgrew this weakness. He has to cover up for an insecurity instead of being comfortable with who he is, and being whole with who he is, living out life as he is with his weaknesses and strengths. And it works the other way. People are more comfortable with a person who's real. People are comfortable when you share with them that you also have weaknesses. Someone asked me once, how do you get up before a crowd and speak? So whenever I'm scared and have to get up before a crowd to talk, I tell them I'm scared. I begin with that. It's like the first date, first girl I dated. I told her, I just want you to know I'm scared out of my wits. You're the first girl I ever dated. Now we can start. You know, you put your fear on the table. So now, okay, now we can talk about it. What? What'd she say? She laughed. So she said, nothing to be scared about. I don't bite, you know, whatever. But I'm saying, many times I've had situations where I was really nervous, so I put it on the table. I said, I just want you to know, I'm nervous. Now we can talk. If you put your fears on the table, people appreciate the fact that you're human just like them. And let's see how to make it work. And then you don't have to be scared because you're not covering up for something all the time. Sometimes when you're scared, so you're constantly covering up for it. There was a guy who was, he had to meet with his boss, and he wasn't sure if he was going to be fired or not. So I suggested to him putting that on the table. I suggested to him, you know, if you're going to spend the whole meeting nervous that they're going to fire you at the end of the meeting, so why don't you begin the conversation with telling him, I want you to know, I'm nervous because I keep thinking you might be firing me. And I have a lot to say, and I think I've contributed a lot that you guys haven't seen yet, or that you might not have seen from your vantage point. But you should just realize I'm sitting here with this constant fear that any day now you're going to fire me. And when his boss heard that, his boss said, okay, so then let's sign a contract for a year. You can't work with such a fear. by putting his fear on the table. So the boss said, okay, that's not good for me, it's not good for you. You have to have confidence in the workplace. You'll produce better when you don't have to live with that fear. There are things we want different, there are things we want better, and there are things we're very happy with. But once he put his fear on the table, so he was able to deal with it, the boss was able to deal with it. They both walked away happier. I'm not saying it always has such a happy ending. Sometimes you can put ideas in the boss's head by saying that. But okay, each case you gotta figure it out. Yeah.
Are any of you realistic to think or to assume that not every case or scenario would be appropriate to start off by putting your fear on the table? Yet therefore if you do have the fear, you're gonna have to contend with it and still be productive and succeed to your best abilities anyways, like through the fear. My question is how do you develop the confidence in order to endure the task at hand, despite the fear that you might have naturally or unnaturally, without it being considered gava or false arrogance or whatever?
So I think that contending with fear involves numerous things. Number one is not to be scared of fear. Meaning, people sometimes think that to be brave is not to be scared, and that's not true. To be brave is to be scared and to be willing to act with the fear. The Rambam in the Shmona Prakim, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, makes that distinction. He says, he who has no fear, that's not a brave person, that's a stupid person. There are things in life you should be scared of. It's not that you're going to war. So to be brave is that you recognize the danger and you're willing to contend with it and you stand up to the fear. But it's not that you don't fear it. If you don't fear it, then you're ignoring the real danger that's out there. Yeah? So that's number one. Not to be scared of the fear. To be able to look at it and say, it's right for me to be scared, but now I have to deal with it. Being brave means I will have fear and I will contend with it. Number two, a person has to ask himself, what's the worst thing that can happen? Very often, we're scared because we don't want the outcome. But is it really the end of the world? Is it the worst thing in the world? So sometimes a person will say, well, I could die. What do you mean? And then you have to ask yourself, okay. So then question number three is, did I do what I could? And this is what the Gemara says, Pachadu v'tzion chata'im. That in Zion, the people who were scared were those that had sins. Meaning, a person is sometimes scared because he knows he didn't do his. And then you have to ask yourself, can I do better now? Sometimes a person says, I'm not prepared, I'm not trained, I'm here in a place where I shouldn't be. And then the question is, should he be there? And is there a way to make amends for that? And if not, Then step number four, which is really a worst case scenario situation, where a person says to himself, okay, but now I have two choices. I can be scared and that'll be destructive, or I could decide I'm not thinking about the fear, I'm going to do the best I possibly can given this scenario. This is where I am now I gotta make it work. I remember the first bris I did alone. So it was far out. And I asked another mole to check out the baby for me because I couldn't travel the distance there and back to check the baby before the bris. And the mole said, everything's normal. I show up to the bris and the kid has a vein the size of this, like a vein in your wrist, like this thick vein that goes straight up, and I got to cut that vein to do the bris. There's no other way to do the bris. So I'm standing there and I'm thinking, oh boy, are we ending up in the hospital today? The first thing I wanted to do was run. The second thing was, no, it's my responsibility. This is what I trained for, and I got to deal with it. Thank God we were able to stop the bleeding. It was a good bris, and everything was fine. But I didn't know that when I came there. I knew I'd have to deal with whatever the consequences of that, whatever the outcome would be. I'm going to do what's right, and now that's it. And I'm saying there are situations in life where you say, what can I do now? The only thing I could do is realize that fear is only going to hurt me. Now I have to deal. When we had a Shabbos bris for one of the kids, so I let a student of mine do part of the bris. And as a consequence of that, after he cut off the foreskin, I cut off the foreskin, there was still another layer that had to be cut off. So now I had between 5 and 10 minutes worth of work. There's a whole crowd around me, and because it's Shabbos, that complicates how you perform a bris. And I had between 5 and 10 minutes worth of work on my own son to finish off the bris. What choice do I have? I could tell you it wasn't fun. You know, you're operating. It's the worst setting you could imagine for an operation, right? Everyone's standing behind you talking. Like, what's taking him so long? You know there's no other way to do this now. Now you got to sit down and slowly finish the job. But you got a deal. So again, the first thing you want to do is run. You look at it and you say... So I remember right when I saw it the first second, I said to him, now you're going to learn. Now you have a whole class on circumcision. Watch closely, because this is like going to be a whole class. This is going to be, you know, now it's going to be, everything's going to be okay then, but it's going to take time to get there. So watch. I forced myself to be optimistic. I said, okay, he's getting a better class out of it. You know, my expense, my son's expense, and he's gonna know how to be a moel better for it. So I said it as much for me as I did for him. Because the first thing I wanted to do was hit him over the head. But it's not his fault, you know. Everything was okay. It was just, it was going to have to take longer to finish the job.
What
okay.
What did you do differently? I thought you did the cut.
I did the cut, but the whole trick in a bris is how you set it up, not the cut itself.
Oh, okay.
And I let him do the setting up. He had to learn. So now I had to finish it off. When you set it up, the truth is it wasn't even his fault. It's just that when we passed hands, I let him set it up, and then he passed it over to me, so then something shifted, and that's what had to be finished off. Which, fine, you know, there was nothing unsafe, it just takes longer, and it's a pain in the neck.
Did your son have any repercussions of his attitude towards you because
of it? No, we're okay. What's interesting is you'd think it would ruin a person's reputation. On the contrary, people were there, and they realized that there was a certain skill that was needed here to get this done, and I got recommendations from doctors who were present at that bris.
Wow.
There were doctors. I thought, that's it. This crowd is never hiring me again. And I was surprised to see the exact opposite happen. Like, people were like, oh, wow, okay. And on the contrary, I got from that bris, I don't think any other bris got me as many requests as that one. Okay, fine.
Makes sense. Any trained boil that figure could probably do it with this whole complication. Here you had something that seemed a little out of the ordinary, and you know, you got to show your skill.
I was thankful people saw it that way. I didn't, you know, at the time I felt like people are cursing me out. What's he doing? What's taking him so long? It's his own kid, doesn't he care? You know, okay.
Tell us about that one too.
So okay. So back to so again, what do we say with regards to fear? Number one, not to be scared of the fact that we have fear. That's normal. That's fair. It's expected. It's part of being intelligent. That's number one. Number two is we tell ourselves, wait a second. Why should I be scared? Am I prepared? So then let me deal. I don't have to be scared. Sometimes you say, yes, I do have to be scared. What am I going to do now? Yesterday, I spoke to a friend of mine who lives in the Muslim quarter. He told me he was walking with his wife out of his house one day, and four Arabs came up, two past him, and he sees them holding their knives bent by their wrist. So he grabs his wife, pulls her back, and says, they got knives. He thought they were going to stab him on the spot. They didn't. They surrounded him. Two behind him, two in front of him. He drew his gun and cocked it, but he didn't cock it. He didn't pull it far back, and there was no bullet in the chamber. So so he's standing there, and he realizes he has no bullet. But he points it at the guys approaching him with the knife, and they don't realize there's no bullet. So they ran. Okay, but can you imagine the fear the first second? He doesn't have time to cock it a second time. The first second, he's got four people with knives around him. His wife and kids are there, and he realizes he's got no bullet there. What?
We should have blasted one of the
players.
The city of peace.
Well, the city of peace, yeah. So, okay, so what choice do you have? You have that second of fear, and then you have to tell yourself, I can't let fear grip me now. I got to deal with what I got. So sometimes we said you reach a point where you say, I'm not well enough equipped, but then you realize fear is only going to hurt me now. Now I have to deal. I don't have that option. Yeah. Usually not. I mean, but it does happen. Sure. But I'll tell you, the Arabs from Angels threatened me down the block from here. So in case you think it only happens in the Muslim quarter. But of course, the Muslim quarter is more dangerous, sure.
I just have one more thing I just wanted to add. I just learned this piece of Torah yesterday that was just like, it just when you're talking about fear, it just seemed to me like a different vantage point. It's from Chavot HaLevavot. It's this story that a pious man was once found sleeping in the wilderness. He was asked, "What caused you to remain calm and to endure the dread of lions and other wild beasts?" The pious man replied, "I stand holy before the Almighty God, in whose presence I am fearful to fear anything other than He Himself."
Okay. So I don't think we're on that madriga.
Yeah.
I agree that there is a level, and there were people who were on that level, and they proved it in the camps of Auschwitz. There were people who were that way. You have one, two rooms down from here. You know the story of Yosef Mendelovich, right?
He teaches here. He ripped his shirt and made a kippah out of it, and they held him at gunpoint. He said, "I only fear one, but you fear many, so I'm not taking it off."
Right. So you have someone who walks these hallways who could do that, right? But I don't know. I don't feel like I'm there. I don't know if I'm there. I'd like to think I'm there, but
yeah.
I don't know.